Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Live and in living color in Nashville, Tennessee, this is The Six. Good evening, everyone. Connor Newt, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, Brando, Brandon Bigsby behind the glass. We are with you broadcasting from the Bisbee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Happy to be here with you. As Chris Sanders would say, with you busters. So without further ado, let's get into it. Dr. Crane, how are we doing tonight?
Oh, man, I'm feeling pretty good. Obviously some chaos today. Not much really in the NFL, but for college, it's all over the place, man.
Oh, yeah?
I love it.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to get into a lot of that today. If you're unfamiliar with what's occurred, the NFL has essentially banned players from going back to college and coming back to the NFL. The SEC, the Big Ten, and now the Big 12 have banned players from coming and playing in their leagues after coming from the NFL. So order is being restored on some level in college football, and we'll get into that later in the program. But of course, the main thing going on in our city this week, the Tennessee Titans in a joint practice tomorrow with the Chicago Bears and then playing a preseason game Saturday night. I believe kick is at 5 p.m. So that will take place tomorrow. And I think there are a lot of things that we need to look at the Titans and, you know, kind of assess the situation going into the practice tomorrow. So to you, Dr. Crane, what is the thing going into tomorrow's practice against the Bears that you are most looking at intently?
Oh, I'm not paying attention at all to the practice. I only worry about preseason games. I'm joking. I'm joking. No. No, what I'm looking forward to tomorrow, I definitely want to see Cam Ward. Kind of what Tim Hasselbeck said earlier on Chase McJoe this week, just going through your reprogressions and just keeping your pocket awareness up along with the ball security. I think that's the big thing is every Titans fan wants to hear positive news from a guy like Cam Ward. No interceptions through practice. And no fumbles. You know, even Tim said it best. He goes, fumbles are worse than interceptions as a quarterback. So if you can be a little bit more secure with the football in your hands and, you know, not have any turnovers, I think that's a win on all cylinders of a football team.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at this as it's the last week of training camp. Then the regular season starts in a couple of weeks. But this is the last week that the practice is going to be open to all the fans, all the media on a consistent basis. So I think I'm looking for a way of how they can send it off well and how they can head into the season with a ton of momentum. And I think that begins and ends with the offense. Like you said, Cam Ward, nothing short of inconsistent, I think, would be the word to describe his preseason so far. You know, he's been having some good moments. We take you back to the blue-white scrimmage. We take you back to some of the moments, the joint practice against Seattle last week. I think he looked really good. I thought he looked okay in the preseason game against Seattle. But then you have days like reportedly what happened yesterday. He threw two picks, wasn't accurate. The San Francisco practice, the San Francisco game. Inconsistency has been the story for him this preseason. And I don't even want to get on my soapbox about how you can't proclaim he's a bust because of that. But to say all that, he needs to show some momentum heading into the season. So I think tomorrow is a premium day for him to do that. Of the three teams that they've played this preseason, I would argue that Chicago has the worst defense. So what does that mean? That means it's an opportunity for Cam Ward to solidify himself with some momentum heading into this preseason game, and even further heading into the regular season when the games actually matter. Carnell Tate, I think this is a pristine opportunity for him to do the same thing. DVD earlier, we talked about how Carnell Tate isn't on the list of concerns for the Titans and shouldn't be on the list of concerns for Titans fans, but it is a little bit disheartening to see that he hasn't dominated against backups. It would be nice to see him go out tomorrow and go out on the preseason field this Saturday and make those marquee plays that we know he's capable of making. Make the plays he made at Ohio State. Make the plays that made the Titans think he is worthy of drafting at number four overall. And if we're keeping it on the offense, I want to see what the offensive line can do. This is a unit that I think, at least for me, hasn't been as disastrous as I thought they were going to be heading into the season. I think they've shown some things. I think J.C. Latham has had a really good camp so far. I think the positions that you feel like were areas of concern in center and right guard with Schlotman and now Carmona at that right guard, I feel like they're not the strongest positions, but they've proven something to me. So I think overall the offense is what needs to shine tomorrow in the joint practice against Chicago and even further on as we head towards the regular season. Send us off on a good note as we end the preseason.
Yeah, and I think one of those beautiful notes as we are in the Music City, and that is Julius Chestnut. I heard you and Parker talking about it last night, and you know, there were not some glowing remarks from a guy like Julius Chestnut from Parker Kelly, but the beautiful thing is, you know, asking Terry McCormick today what did he think about potentially Julius Chestnut making the 53, he says he thinks he's going to make it. He's kind of like, you know, the Mason Kinsey of the running back room.
Yeah.
He just lingers around. And, you know, to your point, Connor, what you're talking about, what's a positive thing to look up towards for the Titans in the preseason, just to understand if they can have that solidified running back room, to know if they can have some pass protectors. And to your point about J.C. Latham and Fernando Carmona at right guard, not hearing a lot out of those guys and knowing that they can get that offensive push in the run game, that's something that's been a big plus for them throughout this preseason so far.
Yeah, and I think if we flip the ball over to the other side, this might be one of the tougher offenses that Tennessee is going to face in the preseason. You could argue the toughest. I mean, Seattle was a Super Bowl winning offense, and you've got the defending offensive player of the year, Sam Darnold, and I feel like Sam Darnold as well as Jackson Smith and Jigba, I should say, but I feel like they handled that offense, at least in the joint practice, relatively well. Alante Taylor had a pick six on Sam Darnold. Femi Oladejo stood his ground. You saw some good things on that side of the ball. Now you're going up against Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze and Luther Burden and DeAndre Swift and a decent offensive line, all combined with a great play-calling offensive-minded head coach in Ben Johnson. So I think for the defense, especially coming off of the game that they had against Seattle's twos, this is a big day for them as well. They've got to show that they have shored some things up. The secondary has got to show that they can contain one of the NFL's top wide receiver units in Rome Odunze and Luther Burden. The front line has got to show that they can make an impact, especially on a good quarterback in Caleb Williams, who, as we know, his play style allows him to maneuver out of the pocket and scramble for some yardage. So we've got to see the defense execute on pretty much all fronts. The front line, the passing game, the run game. There's a lot of things that we need to see tomorrow for me to feel really confident about the defense as a whole. Now, I think there are position groups that I would feel really good about going in. The front line, we've been talking all about the front seven as a whole throughout this entire preseason and how much of a factor they could be for this defense. The secondary is where my concern lies, and I think we're going to learn a lot more about the secondary tomorrow as they go up against one of the brightest offensive minds in the game.
Yeah, it'll be a unique offensive set for the Tennessee Titans defense to go up against, because there were two names you didn't mention, whether that was Colston Loveland and Cole Kmet,
yep,
the tight end position. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for not only the Titans defense as a whole, but especially the linebacker room, because as linebackers, you have to make sure you drop back into your pass coverage, and you got to be able to communicate well. And I think that's something the Titans have lacked the last couple of preseason games, and that's the communication between the secondary and the second level of the linebackers. So if there can be some solid communication between the linebackers and secondary, along with picking up some of those just coverages and bumps from the tight ends on the offensive side of the ball, at least just bump them off their route a little bit to buy yourself a little bit of time, it'll fluster the quarterback in those joint practices, which will be Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch that tomorrow, because Caleb Williams, to be honest with you, is one of my favorite players in the NFL. I think he plays with such style and such poise, especially when we get to crunch time and it's the do or die plays. I think he plays with such poise, and that's kind of what I want to see from Cam Moore. That calm composure, the accuracy. I think they're similar players, not in the style of play, but the mentality and how they approach the game. So I'm interested to see how Caleb Williams and this defense go up against each other. The inside linebacker room is the room that I feel honestly the safest about heading into the season defensively. I mean, the defensive tackles, of course, with Simmons and John Franklin Myers, but
sure.
The inside linebacker room has been a pleasant surprise, and I feel like all four of the guys that you're going to trot out there at that position have something they bring to the table and affect the game and the defense on all levels. So I'm interested to see how they handle, especially when you work the short game passes and the run game with DeAndre Swift, I'm interested to see how they handle that tomorrow. Overall, I think I don't think it would be bold to say that this defense is going up against its toughest offensive challenge of the preseason tomorrow. Just with the play calling combined with the young talent, I think that there's explosivity. Is that the word? Explosivity?
Explosivity? Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good old Catholic private school taught me that word. There's explosivity, amen, on the side of Chicago, and I think the Titans defense is going to have to do their damnedest to try and contain that. So that'll be something to watch tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, Anthony Hill has been one of those, you know, rookie linebackers throughout the preseason, according to Pro Football Focus, one of the higher graded linebackers. So, you know, I'll be intrigued, again, back to my point initially of the coverages for the linebacker room going up against guys like Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland. I think that's the last phase for a rookie linebacker like that to see if he's truly matured and adjusted to the NFL game, because that is a position on the offensive side of the ball, the tight end position, that has evolved into an extension of the passing game. We've seen the George Kittles of the world, the Travis Kelce's of the world, and even some cases, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert. The list goes on and on. Now it's turned into a very versatile position where guys like, you know, Brock Bowers, Trey McBride, and even David Njoku in some cases, Harold Fannin in Cleveland, those players have really transcended the position. Now you have a guy in Cole Kmet and Colston Loveland that are coming to Nashville that are going to really give you a run for your money in that linebacker room.
615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Our phone and text lines, as always, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot to get into today. Obviously, we'll continue the conversation on the Titans preseason. Massive news coming out of college football and the NFL today as the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12 so far have banned returning NFL players to college. And the NFL has done the same. They have banned, it's hard to explain, but they have banned college players who have gone to the NFL who are trying to go back to college but can't go back to college coming back to the NFL. Makes sense if you think about it, but it is hard to explain. Massive
Basically,
news.
Both the streets are blocked off.
Yep. It's a one-way lane to Indeed. Enjoy your time there. We'll get into a lot of that. An interesting topic raised to me by one Coach Rick Noon, and I think he has a good topic, and he'll be very proud that we're using this. What are some teams and schools in college football that need their rival more than their rival needs them? I have actually comprised a list of this, but I'm interested on Nick Frazier's opinion when we get into that later on. And, of course, we'll wrap things up with Where Are They Now? But coming up next, the breaking news in college football. What does this mean for the landscape of college sports as we know it, as well as the NFL? We'll discuss coming up next. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, Connor Newt, Brandon Bigsby here with you on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. This is The Six here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier here with you on your drive home on this Wednesday. And obviously the big thing going on in the city this week, the Titans joint practice against the Chicago Bears. But the something, Bears. The Bears, as we will say. And I am truthfully, selfishly, I'm excited to follow Caleb Williams around tomorrow and just hear what that guy has to say on the field, because I hear he has Larry Bird-esque trash talk ability. So I want to hear that.
Really?
That's what I've heard.
Interesting.
That's what I've heard. So that's obviously the big news in this city. But the big news in college football and in college sports as a whole, I think, takes precedence over this. I think this is massive news. For those unfamiliar, obviously the story this week has been Lane Kiffin and LSU trying to bring back pro players to play for his Tigers this year. They were waived by their NFL teams and committed to play at LSU. Since then, three of the four Power Four conferences have banned returning NFL players coming back to college. In fact, the SEC put its professional sports rule out, resulting in the following penalties. 50% season suspension for the head coach. 50% of that sport's annual operating budget gone, and SEC voting privileges on business matters completely revoked. So the SEC standing on business here. The Big Ten was the first to do it. The SEC followed shortly after, and today it was announced that the Big 12 is doing that. The NFL has since responded as well, saying that no player that has dropped out of their league, tried to go back to college, and is now returning to the NFL, or at least trying to, is allowed to play. The NFL said, you get one shot, and if you don't capitalize on it, sorry, you don't get to play in our league. I think this is massive for college sports, not just football, but basketball as well. I think this is a huge step in the right direction for the NCAA. I think this is huge on the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12, the individual conferences, for standing their ground and saying, no, we're not going to tolerate this. If you're wondering how many teams voted on the SEC law that passed, 15 of the 16. And it was unanimous. One team, and I bet you can't guess who, just decided not to vote. So I wonder who. The purple and gold, perhaps. So, Nick Frazier, I know this news broke quite literally as soon as you and Joe got off the air, which I felt really bad for you. So here's your opportunity. What do you make of what's going on in college football right now? Is this good for the sport?
100% it's good for the sport. Finally, college football and college athletics as a whole has a little grip of life. I think that's the big issue with today's day and age, is that you can't really do a CBA yet, from what we know of. You can't get a hold on the NIL value. All these players are getting paid buka amount of money for whatever they want to get paid. And, I mean, it's not an issue. I love the capitalism of it all. You know, collect what you can. But then there's the other aspect of these professionals trying to come back to college, and now that they can't, finally. I mean, I saw a few group of six schools kind of following suit with this as well.
Yeah.
The Sun Belt was one of them. So congrats to college football. Congrats to college athletics. I know I saw a couple days ago, I know you did as well, the SEC making their statement of, you know, we don't, you know, appreciate this, or whatever it was, paraphrasing. And everybody was like, all right, now do something about it. Everybody was like, do something about it. Well, they did something about it, and I think On Three, and then Matt Nolander, the senior writer for CBS Sports, was on this first. And, you know, 50%, like you said, you phrased it perfectly, 50% of the revenue, 50% of the season, and then the voting rights with the SEC for, you know, business matters. I think it's perfect. It's genius. It really stabs each university at the heart if they choose to use a professional player.
And truth be told, I think the SEC punishment is a little bit light. I would suspend the coach for the entire season, not just half of it. I'd suspend him for the entire season. The rest I can live with. 50% of your budget gone, which is a massive amount of money, by the way, especially for some of these teams like Georgia, Alabama, Texas, teams that invest a lot into football, or even on basketball, like Kentucky invests a lot of money into college basketball. That's detrimental to a program to lose that amount of money. And then you lose the right to vote on things that affect your school on a day-to-day basis. I think it's a very strong punishment. I would have suspended the coach for the entire year, because you break a rule, you should be punished for it, and that's a massive rule to break. You should be punished pretty massively. But overall, I'm happy with the rules that they put in place. I'm happy with the punishment. I'm happy they finally decided to grow a pair and stand their ground. Good for them. I think we're moving forward.
So here's my question to you, Connor. If a team does go through with grabbing a player that wants to come back to college and they do end up playing and they get the penalty, does that mean the college football playoff committee, and for football's case as an example, do they leave out that said university that chooses to go this route, or do they go off of, well, this player played X amount of games, we're only going to evaluate the games they did not play? Like, how does this all take place? Because, yes, the SEC and all these other Power Four schools, universities, they can, you know, put this sanction on this university, but that, I mean, what's the repercussion? I know there's a repercussion there. It's, you know, 50% here, 50% there. But, I mean, it still is giving them the avenue to do it, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. I think that's an interesting point by you because, as we know, the College Football Playoff Committee and these conferences are separate entities. And the College Football Playoff Committee and the NCAA are separate from each other. The CFP committee is a completely individually run committee, I think. I think it's run by ESPN, basically.
Yeah, it's separate.
Yeah, so they would have to come to cahoots, I guess, and the committee would have to separately make the decision to leave that team out. I don't know if the SEC would force vacation of wins on that team. Like, let's use college basketball, for example. The whole Charles Bediako situation, if that were to happen today, would the SEC crack down on Alabama and said any win that you had with him on your roster is now null and void, and you can't count that on your resume? That's what I would do. But I don't know if that's going to come to fruition. My worry here is what happens when you have players come out and sue the NCAA and the SEC and the Big Ten for collective bargaining issues. And then they get the temporary injunctions, which, as we know, all you got to do is find a crooked judge willing enough to give you one. And then they're immediately eligible to play again. Is that going to be something that comes up? This isn't over. We know this isn't over. But it's a great, great step in the right direction. There's a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and to answer your question to the loose ends aspect of it, as much as college fans and university fans, whatever, that don't want government to be involved, and I know D-Mace is on this side of does not want government to be involved. I get all that, but I feel like the only way, because I've heard him say it before, but I think the only way to kind of find a solution to this would just to be implementing some form of government, you know, issue here.
Yeah.
I know they have the, you know, Save College Sports Act. I know that's in the works, but again, stuff that goes through the judicial system can take a good duration of time. We all know that. So like you said, Connor, the injunctions, they could take time. It just that's the big limbo right now in college athletics, and it's just going to continue for right now. I think that this is our happy medium as fans and as people that follow the sports of collegiate athletics, that is. It's just the limbo for the time being.
Yeah, and I think some of it is you're going to have to look at isolated incidents and not just rule everyone incomplete. Like Mark Mitchell, for example, he's committed to play basketball at Kentucky. He exercised his 4 years of eligibility. He's suing for that fifth year. And, you know, I think he has a good case to do that. He played in the summer league with the Denver Nuggets, but didn't sign a contract, didn't declare for the draft. He was just automatically eligible since he was a graduating senior, and never signed any legal documents from the NBA. So he was never considered an NBA player. He is now eligible. He is currently eligible, and I would say rightfully so. So what I'm trying to say is I think you need to find isolated incidents of players that fit that demographic of player, guys that are not just, oh, I got cut by the Cleveland Browns, time to go play for LSU. There are guys out there that are deserving of that extra year. You just have to put out a search committee and do your research and hope that, you know, the NCAA sees through to that and the SEC or the Big Ten or the conference, whatever, sees through to that. Overall, I think we're in the process of eliminating a lot of the bad things going on in college sports. This is a good first step.
let me throw in another example out there, or an idea. We talked earlier in the year with Brennan Sorsby throughout the summer of maybe he goes into the supplemental draft. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. What if there is a giant pool of college athletes that, I mean, you make a good point with the Denver Nuggets in this case, with the player going to Kentucky, didn't accept any money.
Yep.
So what if the NFL somehow figures out a way to grab this collective pool of players and do not put them through the regular NFL draft, have them sign some form of a waiver where they cannot collect any form of rookie money, because obviously Daquan Wright, who is the tight end that's trying to come back to LSU, yep, played for the Browns. You went through rookie minicamp, and there was a listener that came up with the figures over the weekend on Weekend Huddle, said it's roughly about $2,000 a week. So, I mean, think, you're in there for a handful of weeks. It comes out to $8,000 as of right now. You have to give that money back if you're trying to play collegiate football. There's no way
Absolutely.
You can hold on to that, because that's professional money. So if there's a way the NFL can implement a, let's say, a supplemental draft, where, and or not a supplemental draft, but just a pool to where there these NFL franchises can pick these players, kind of like a waiver wire pickup in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
And they can take them through training camp where they don't collect a single dime, and if it works out for them, they can sign a rookie deal. If it doesn't work out for them, they can return back to their respective college team. And I get that goes against the whole issue of, well, they went pro. Well, to your point about the basketball player, played in a summer league, didn't accept any money, headed back to college. I think that's another form that the NFL can look at if they're really trying to develop some talent, because we all know there's a bit of a quarterback issue in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and a developmental issue at that. I think that's the nice passive way of addressing it, saying the door is still open for you as long as you address your mistakes and what have you. The approach that I gathered today, and this is very subject to change at least, but it sounds like the NFL is trying to say, yeah, if you played for us at one point and now you're trying to go back, sorry, door's closed. You can't come back to the NFL nor college. Time to find a job. So I think that's a good alternative for opening the door a little bit. I am worried about, if that were to happen hypothetically, would you have potential lawsuits of guys that maybe went undrafted and participated in rookie minicamp and kind of like Mark Mitchell didn't accept any professional money trying to go back? Would you have court issues with that? I don't know. It remains to be seen. There's a lot that needs to happen, a lot of loose ends that need to be tied. But overall, good on the NCAA, good on the SEC, good on the Big Ten, good on the Big 12, good on the G6 programs that are stepping down on this. Like I told you, I think it's a great first step to reclaiming college sports. I think we're on the right path here, Frazier.
Yeah, and to the whole Lane Kiffin point of this, when he mentioned that on, what, Tuesday or Monday or wherever it was, well, if they don't play for us, they'll play for somebody else. Yeah, nice try. Way to try to play the fence there.
Yeah.
Ain't happening.
No, ain't happening. They'll play the football players in the longest yard, too. That's what they'll play.
Yeah, that's right. Fall crew, watch out.
Yeah, fall crew. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the conversation. Coming up next, this is a fun conversation I think we're going to have. As college football season approaches and you've got some somewhat rivalries being played early, I have been thinking about this question and I've kind of comprised a list. What are some schools that need their rival more than their rival needs them? I think it's an interesting question. We'll discuss that coming up next. Connor Newt, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier here with you. This is The Six here on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. This is The Six here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newt, Nick Frazier, Brando spinning it back there. We always appreciate some Michael Jackson here on the program. Before we get into schools that need their rivals more than their rivals need them, let's go to our phone line, 615-737-1025, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. We were talking about the current landscape of college sports, what's happening, the rules being passed, and Ralph wants to chime in on that conversation. Hi, Ralph, go ahead.
Hey, guys, love the show, great show.
Thank
you. I disagree, though. Just humor me for a second.
Okay.
When you get paid for your craft, what does that make you?
A professional.
A professional. These college teams lost their, you know, their purity of college football when they started paying these players. I have no problem with an NFL player going back. Some of these college kids are making more than pro players. So to me, I say, you know what? It's going to help the game. I mean, you had Indiana win with the portal. Now you can have teams, I mean, I don't know, you can have teams like Appalachian State or Duke winning it. You know, one day maybe Patrick Mahomes goes back to college. I don't know, just shoot for the moon. It's America. That's the dream. Let it happen. They're semi-pro, albeit, but they're still pros. They, you know, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. Say, oh, look at the purity of college football. You know, we're so pure. Give me a break. You're getting paid now. So arena football, CFL, NFL, do it. You know what I mean? Shoot for the moon. That's the American dream. You want to go NFL, college, back to NFL? Who cares? I think it's good for the sport.
Thanks, Ralph. I appreciate the call. And yeah, I have some interesting points there. I think he brings up the right way to argue the other side of this. To me, I look at it as this. Yes, they are professionals. Yes, they are being paid for their craft. I agree with him on that point. But it would be like if I decided in college, yeah, college isn't really for me. I'm going to drop out and go back and be a senior in high school again. It's just, it logically doesn't make sense. And I understand they're being professionally paid, but the organization that they're going to, no matter what it is, AF1, CFL, UFL, NFL, that's an organization that is considered a step above college football. It's like a promotion. Do you want to automatically de-promote yourself for the sake of you can't cut it in the big leagues? That's where my stance is.
Yeah, and I get Ralph's point. Like, you know, let's use, for example, Jeremiah Smith. As a sophomore, he probably could have played in the NFL, or even after his freshman year, probably could have played in the NFL. But because of the two-year rule, you got to play until, you know, once you're a junior, you can go on. So to Ralph's point, yeah, there are probably some professionals in college that should be making the jump to the NFL. And if there are some that are not really excelling well in the NFL and they're trying to make it back to college, I get his point. But again, the NFL has a process, and the NFL has a practice squad for that reason. If there are players that don't meet the requirements of being on a 53-man roster, they're probably going to get waived, put onto a practice squad, and then they will still make their money that way. And it's not like those guys are making pennies to the dollar. No, they're making a good chunk of change on the practice squad. And so, you know, to his point about saying he didn't have an issue for players to go from NFL back to college, I think it's a gray area, and like kind of we've been talking about. And I'm okay with his take, but I just have to kindly disagree because there's the merit behind it is still invalid, if that makes sense.
I agree. I appreciate the point, and I appreciate the healthy debate. This is what we live for on this show. Healthy debate. No one calling in saying we don't know what we're talking about. I appreciate it, Ralph, and thank you for calling, and thank you for listening. Okay, so I wanted to get into this with you, Dr. Crane. I think this is a fun topic as we're getting closer to college football. 10 days away from the start of the college football season. And I was thinking about this. There are things we consider rivalries in college sports, and they're sure, the big top rivalries. Then there's those secondary rivals where it feels like one rival needs the other rival more than that rival needs them. So I've comprised a bit of a list here of rivalries where one rival is more invested than the other. Here we go. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Auburn needs Alabama. Michigan State needs Michigan. NC State needs North Carolina. This one might trigger some of our friends. Vanderbilt needs Tennessee. But I've counteracted it with myself. Kentucky needs Tennessee. However, Tennessee needs Alabama. MTSU needs Western Kentucky. Arkansas needs LSU. Georgia Tech needs Georgia, and Penn State needs Ohio State. Those are just some of the ones I've come up with in terms of rivals that are more one-sided to, let's say, the lesser than the bigger.
Right. I agree with a lot of those. The only one I don't agree on is the Penn State-Ohio State one. I would consider that pretty even down the middle for the most part. Now, here's some that I would say, ooh, bold boy. Talk about landslides here. And I apologize if I upset the apple cart here, Connor, but I'll save it the best for last. Oklahoma State needs Oklahoma.
Yep.
The Bedlam series. They definitely need them. Oklahoma leads that 91-20-7 on the record there. Navy needs Notre Dame.
Yes.
We all know that.
Yep.
Iowa State needs Oklahoma. So Oklahoma is needed in two rivalries.
That's a rivalry?
Exactly, right? It's overall record is 69-5-2 for Oklahoma over the Cyclones. And then the Apple Cup. We all know Washington State needs Washington.
Oh.
That's another big one.
Some shots thrown at Coach Bigsby back there.
I'm sorry,
Hey,
Bigsby.
Don't disrespect my people in Pullman, okay?
I'm sorry. And the last one, Connor, again, please don't be upset, but Kentucky needs Tennessee.
Oh, it was on my list. I know.
Yeah.
In football, at least. Basketball, yes, different story. But yeah, Kentucky needs Tennessee. One omission that I'm just now realizing, Texas A&M needs Texas. I mean, their whole fight song is quite literally about hating the University of Texas. And they never beat them. Texas always walks away with the win. So I think that's one we should add to the list.
That was going to be the one I say. I would also say, in terms of football, Kansas needs Kansas State, and they also need Missouri.
Yes.
Ooh.
Kansas at Kansas State is... on
football, I don't know, man. I mean, it's been tough sledding for Kansas for, what, the last 30 years, 40 years? At least Kansas State, they've had some runs with Snyder, and it's been a respectable program compared to Kansas, to where it's literally a basketball school, and that's kind of it.
I realize I'm delving into dangerous waters by asking Nick Frazier this question.
Oh, boy.
Don't you even.
Where do we stand on the Egg Bowl? Who needs who?
It's T-Sun, dog. We all know Ole Miss needs Mississippi State. So it's no questions asked on that one. I know exactly. Regardless of Mississippi State being, you know, not the best of teams the last couple of years, they're still top of Mississippi.
See, I would argue they need each other because they both hate each other equally. There's just rivalries across the country that are like that. Like, we all know the one that comes to mind immediately, Ohio State, Michigan. They need each other.
Yep.
Let's see.
What about UCLA, USC? Does UCLA need USC, or is that pretty even as well?
They need each other. As one-sided as that rivalry is, I mean, historically it's pretty even, but now as one-sided as it is, they don't like each other at all. Now, I would argue USC might need Notre Dame.
I'd agree with that.
Ooh.
I don't know. Especially since, I mean, the series is discontinued and is starting again at the start of the next decade. But in terms of pageantry and who's the more desirable brand, I would argue it's Notre Dame by a landslide.
Yeah. The way Marcus Smart has, you know, like Joe has said when you were on that one day producing, Connor, they went to the gym. Same thing with LSU. They went to the gym.
Marcus Freeman.
So imagine.
Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I say Marcus Smart. I'm
yes,
sorry. I got my where are they now brain going. I apologize.
It's
Marcus
okay.
Marcus Freeman.
I heard Joe call BJ Callahan Brian Callahan the other day, so it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's not wrong, but, you know, it goes back to the gym. But it is what it is. But no, like Marcus Freeman, they went to the gym. The Catholics, they took communion. They went to first confession. They had everything done. They had the holy water sprayed. They're ready to go.
Who needs each other more, Tennessee or Florida? I think Tennessee might need Florida.
I'm with you on that.
I think they need each other.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, I don't think that if you look at these two programs for the last 15 years that they've been that different from each other.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of get to each other. Florida usually wins at home. They lost this past time, but what was it, like 20 years before they lost in the swamp to Tennessee? So
here's a tough one. Does South Carolina need Clemson, or does Clemson need South Carolina?
Oh, that's a tough one, Frazier. I would argue South Carolina might need Clemson recently.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just some pageantry around that rivalry that just tells me, regardless of the record, South Carolina just goes after them nonstop. I mean, that's what a rivalry is, but I don't know. I think it's more Clemson needs South Carolina.
Really? Clemson might need South Carolina?
Yeah, because let's say Clemson's in a playoff spot or they're trying to go to the college football playoff. I mean, the team that's probably going to spoil it for them would be at the end of the season with South Carolina.
Here are some additions from my father. I guess he didn't hear him because we said all of them. He says NC State needs North Carolina. Vanderbilt needs Tennessee. Georgia needs Georgia Tech. Michigan State needs Michigan. And Navy needs Notre Dame.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's one we're all forgetting, and especially on these airwaves, it needs to be mentioned. We're alumni.
MTSU Western
Kentucky
needs Western.
Needs Western. Our Western needs MTSU, excuse me.
No, I think MTSU needs Western.
Yeah, I think it's the reverse.
I think it's the other way.
I was trying to be beneficial here, guys. I'm trying to throw a bone here or there.
No, it's pretty bad right now.
Can I toss another one out there? Because this kind of sparked it. Who needs the other more between Florida and Florida State?
Oh. I mean.
Because both are pretty down bad right now.
Yeah, I would say Florida State needs Florida more.
I would agree.
I would lean that way too, but it's not far.
It's not far, but historically speaking, Florida State's always been kind of the little brother. Here's the thing, state schools should always dominate, and for some reason, some of them don't. Like, no offense, Frazier, Mississippi State should be a better team than Ole Miss because they are a state school, and they get more of the money and more of the people coming in.
Yep.
So
I'm not going to disagree with that. You're absolutely right.
It's like Clemson should not be better than South Carolina. South Carolina is the state school. But let's put it in the other term. Kentucky should always be better than Louisville because Kentucky's a state school and Louisville's an inner city school. It's right. Interesting, the dichotomy of college football.
Yeah, that's a rivalry I'm curious to know your thoughts on, because in basketball, is it Louisville needs Kentucky or Kentucky needs Louisville?
They need each other because it's built off quite literally pure hatred. Like, divorces have happened because of the husband is a Kentucky guy and the wife is a Louisville gal. Divorces have happened because of this. But if we're asking the question of who's little brother, Louisville's a little brother in all sports.
Okay.
I mean, they won last year, the last 2 years in football, but it was a while. It was like 8 consecutive years where Kentucky beat Louisville, no matter the situation. Never forget Lamar Jackson's Heisman season. He fumbled and lost to Kentucky. What a great time.
Yeah, that was an electric season, though, when he won Heisman. My goodness.
What was that, 2018 was that season?
Yeah.
I think so.
What, for Lamar, the Heisman year?
Yeah.
That was 2017.
Okay.
2016-17.
Okay. That was the year.
I just remember he played at Syracuse, and he just hopped over that linebacker on the 2-yard line and just waltzed right on in.
I'll always have that over Lamar Jackson. It'll always be something I carry with me. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. One final segment for us here on The Six. We'll wrap things up with Where Are They Now right here on 102.5 The Game. This is my favorite mix, other than the Tiny Desk one, the club mix of outstanding.
It's too good, man. It really is.
If I was allowed to play silly underdogs this year, I have to be the assistant commissioner because you can't play behind the board. This would be my theme, for sure.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
Welcome back in. This is The Six here on 102.5 The Game. Connor Newton, Nick Frazier, Brandon Bigsby here with you. And as we wrap things up, we play everyone's favorite game other than celebrity birthdays. But I think it's climbing up the power rankings. Maybe 1A, 1B situation here. You know it. Where are they now? Let's go ahead and play. All right. I got a college one for you today. Because we're talking about, you know, transferring in the landscape of college football. Here's a college one for you. Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Northwestern, Eastern Carolina. Brandon Bigsby, do not say anything. I want to see if Nick Frazier can remember his former Mississippi State quarterback.
Mike Wright?
There you go. It is Mike Wright.
Boom.
It wasn't much of a pull, but I thought, I'll throw the boys a bone today. So
didn't hurt.
Figure it out. Nick Frazier.
All right. This one, I'll save it for last, so I'll go the second one there. All right, we're going to the gridiron, okay? From Waterloo, Iowa. All right.
All right.
Played his football career in college at Kansas State. 4th-round draft pick in the NFL draft. Played for the Chargers, the Saints, and the Eagles.
Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Great job. Good one.
Great job.
Good one. All right, Brando.
All right, we're going to stick with the gridiron here. This player played for the following teams: the New York Giants, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Baltimore Ravens, the New Orleans Saints, the Miami Dolphins, and then he ended his career with the Bucs.
Okay, so 2 tenures with the Bucs.
Warren Sapp.
It is not Warren Sapp. It is a defensive player, though.
Oh, well, there goes my answer. Let me think. What year was he drafted?
He was drafted in 2010, the 15th overall pick out of South Florida, USF.
Oh, it's not that.
What was the first team? Baltimore, you said?
Giants, Bucks, Ravens, Saints, Dolphins, Bucks.
All right. So Giants, 2015, defensive player.
Defensive player. Let's see.
Drafted in 2010, not 2015. Oh, he was the 15th overall pick in 2010.
Was it JPP?
It is JPP.
Yeah.
Jason Pierre-Paul.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Two-time Super Bowl champ, first-team All-Pro in 2011, and three-time Pro Bowler, which who knows what that means anymore.
So was he a part? Yeah, he was a part of that Super Bowl team in 2010, right?
He was a part of the team that beat New England on the Mario Manningham catch and then won another one with Brady and the Bucks in 2021.
All right.
Okay, all right.
I think we got time so I can squeeze in one more. To the hardwood. Did you say what I think you said?
I'm sorry?
Never mind. I thought you said something not appropriate for air that we say all the time. Anyways, to the hardwood.
No.
Chicago Bulls, Oklahoma City Thunder, Atlanta Hawks, Utah Jazz, Houston Rockets.
What was the first team?
Chicago Bulls, Oklahoma City Thunder, Atlanta Hawks, Utah Jazz, Houston Rockets. This is a poll, ladies and gentlemen. This is a poll.
Can you tell us when he was drafted?
Drafted in the 2006 NBA draft. Actually drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, then traded?
Then traded.
Mm.
2009 all defensive team.
Go through the teams one more time for me.
Roger that. Chicago Bulls, Oklahoma City Thunder, Atlanta Hawks, Utah Jazz, Houston Rockets.
Kyle Korver.
That's a good guess, but no.
Yeah, that's a good guess. I don't feel like this is it, but I'm going to guess it anyways. Is it Serge Ibaka?
It is not Serge Ibaka.
Dwight Howard.
It is not Dwight Howard. He is from Switzerland.
Switzerland.
Sui. What college did he play for?
He played for Switzerland.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm stumped. I'm going to Roman Josi for my final answer.
Probably closer than the other two, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm looking at out time, so I'm going to go ahead and wave the white flag on this one.
Brandon Vigzy, you got to pay attention in the following weeks. It's Thabo Sefolosha.
Oh, man. I forgot he was Swiss.
Thabo.
Man, that's a great I forgot he was a Swiss native.
You gotta, I'm dropping you hints every once in a while. And every once in a while, I'll circle back in a couple weeks.
Long-term storytelling.
Long-term booking, indeed. That'll do it for us here on the 6. We'll see you tomorrow, of course. Got to break down a lot of Titans practice, a lot of what goes on in college football. Mondays and Wednesdays, two of the best days of the week. Because Mr. Dr. Crane, the award winner, joins us on the program. Dr. Crane, we appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys. I always appreciate you having me on the 6, Connor. Thank you, buddy.
Absolutely. That'll do it for us here on the 6. For Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, for Brandon Bigsby, my name is Connor Newt. Saying so long, no more words for us. This has been the 6 on 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step 4, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.